Welcome to the Early Years Insight. I'm Kathy Leatherbarrow from Eden, and today's guests are Lucy and Matthew Pottinger, who are the owners of Grassroots Nurseries. Welcome.
Hi.
Right, so we're going to look at how early years practitioners have moved on and had to evolve with their roles. It's not just about caring for children anymore and helping them develop in their learning. It's all about treating the family, you know, not treating, but supporting the family holistically to ensure that the child is getting their best start in life.
Yeah.
Do you find that a lot with your nursery?
Yeah, we've had to really adapt. I mean, we've been open since 2018, and the changes we've seen since then, you know, you've gone from an early years practitioner doing a level 3 qualification, and then all the, like, we have the EEF are doing a lot of things at the moment. We've just signed up to do the, coaching children's emotional wellbeing. Yeah. There's lots of things that are being thrown out for practitioners to join and kind of get involved in. But with our parents, if you think of a day-to-day routine of a practitioner, you're greeting parents at the door. That's a real skill. If you've got parents that have had an issue that mm-hmm. might be been up in the night, it takes some real coaching to support a family and children that might not want to come into the setting. You know, you've got to really step up. It's not a case of picking up a child and taking them into the mm-hmm. nursery anymore. We're looking more at emotional wellbeing. Are we giving the child time to emotionally regulate before they're coming through the door? Are we really thinking holistically? You've really got to put your investigative skills into practice.
And it's a big skill anyway.
It really is.
Just trying to normally help, encourage children to self-regulate their emotions anyway.
We've been
learning and understanding that it's okay to be sad, it's okay to be angry, to be cross, to be happy, and learning to differentiate between those emotions and deal with them is a skill.
Yeah.
But then when you're taking on board the parents' emotions as well, and you're being passed over a little tot at the door with a parent that is either tired, cross, stressed, unhappy, poorly, you know, which all then impacts the child's beginning of the day, doesn't it?
Our philosophy from the start has also been about how we look after our staff. We say happy staff, happy children,
mm-hmm.
and we have a huge emphasis on supporting their emotional health and wellbeing. And one thing we've noticed, we've been doing a lot of trauma-informed practice recently, safeguarding and, you know, children's wellbeing has just really taken quite a nosedive since COVID especially.
Yeah.
And a lot of the staff training we've been doing, we write a lot of our own in-house staff training, and we've been focusing around the adults' self-regulation because
mm-hmm.
we're finding with our staff, we're telling them and supporting them to teach a child to emotionally regulate, but we have a lot of adults that don't know how to do it as well.
Yeah.
And yes, they're in a professional setting and they're having to do what they need to do professionally, but we feel like we need to tap into that further. Are they getting the support? Do they know how to recognise when they may be feeling like they're being triggered by a child, you know, and they're feeling unregulated themselves, you know? Are they asking for help from the team members?
Yeah,
are they reflecting,
you know,
on that?
It's still seen as a weakness, isn't it?
It is, definitely.
Very much of a weakness rather than a strength
to
be able to recognise and say, I'm struggling here, can I have a little bit of support? Because like you say, unless they are aware of their own mental wellbeing, then they're going to find it very difficult to support children in recognising that, aren't they?
We say that all the time. One of the biggest and best strengths you can have as a person is to say, I'm really struggling right now and I need help.
Do you find your staff's emotional wellbeing is very different following COVID? Did your nursery stay open?
We did. We lived in the setting for 10 weeks.
Really?
Yeah, we lived with my dad died in the November, and we went to move in with my mum because she was really struggling with the grief. And then when COVID hit, she has COPD, so she was you'll kill me, you can't live here. So me, Matt, 4 children and the dog moved into the nursery for 10 weeks. That was enjoyable.
We had two members of staff
came in. We didn't have many children, but over them 10 weeks we got busier and busier, had to release more staff out of in isolation because just to help with the capacity. And in the September after COVID, we had 53 children start in nursery.
Wow.
That was crazy.
And what you registered for?
Well, we can have 53 children.
Oh, right, okay.
But, yeah, obviously across the week we have loads of children start. Wow. And we ended up opening another setting in the January.
And do you, and obviously everybody has come out of that in a very different place, haven't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, even the most well-rounded adult, you know, has come out of that lockdown and that period of our lifetime, different people.
Yeah.
Do you feel that we're still adapting to that?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a catch-22. I did my master's in psychology over COVID as well. And my dissertation was on how parents, mothers and their babies, how they coped during COVID. Mm-hmm. And it was a 50-50 split of people that thrived.
Really?
And really enjoyed the time with the baby in isolation without other people getting involved. And
really invested in that bonding time.
Gave the father a chance to bond with the baby. And then the flip side, people that just
couldn't cope.
Didn't have the experience they expected.
It's very difficult bringing a baby home for the first time anyway, isn't
it?
Yeah,
definitely.
You know, because I remember my first, you know, I put her down in her car seat in the lounge and I just stood there and looked at her and thought, what do I do now?
Where's the manual?
And her dad looked at me and said, you're meant to be a professional in this. I went, not in her, not in mine. And I felt really overwhelmed with the pressure of being totally responsible for this tiny, helpless human being.
I think it's probably the hardest job in the world being a
parent. Yeah.
I say that. I mean, we've got 6 children between us and I can go to work and you give me the most difficult child in the world and I will be on it, support that child. I can help. I go home and I'm like, no, I'm out. I can't do this. Because you're emotionally invested.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much more, right, you know, there's the element of judgment, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's the element, you know. Yeah, you know, if I get it wrong, what's going to happen?
You're supposed to know what you're doing because you work in this environment.
Yeah, absolutely. You know. It's really, but like you say, anybody else's child, you know, you're the font of all knowledge, aren't you? You know this, you've got this, you've studied it for years, you've learnt through experience, highs and lows. Crack on, we'll support this child, you know, with their early development. But you're
bring you your own and that's it. Everything's out of the window. But I think as well, like, since COVID, we've seen a huge rise in children with SEND needs. Children with just developmental delay.
Yeah.
Child attention.
I know speech and language was a very big area of concern coming out of COVID because children weren't getting the social interactions, the rich vocabulary, the broad range of vocabulary.
That was a huge issue, definitely.
But I can see from research and papers that are being wrote that things are on the rise and on the up, and children's language is, you know, coming on and developing.
There were so many interventions put in place as well, like we do see and learn, we do with speech and language come in quite often to support some of our children with SEND needs. And I think everyone's knowledge, confidence, I think confidence is a big thing in early years practice because you question a lot, is what you're doing, is it right? Is it good enough for the children? But I think we've had a couple of years now. I think we say this with our SEND children, we feel like we've done it that much now. We know what we're doing, you know, we know. And I think one of the most important things is it's knowing who to go to for advice. It's, we always say, it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah, it's trustworthy, isn't it? But not just trustworthy, that you know there's going to be a result there for that child, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And supporting the families, because you've got to, you know, you've got to practice what you preach, don't you? You've got to make sure what you're doing is right. And we work with Portage, we work, like I say, with speech and language. You know, it's just having someone that you can pick up the phone to and be like, hi, it's Lucy from Grassroots, are you okay? You know, and having that relationship with them, that no question, because I think a lot of people are fearful of asking the question for sounding stupid or like you should know this.
Yeah.
But that's not the case.
No.
You know, we're there to support each other.
And I think, like we've said, you know, it's not a case of, you know, doing your level 3 in early years anymore and learning how different children learn and throw in some schemas in and different theories. It's that holistic approach of what adults are working with these children, what are their skills and their, you know, attributes to certain types of children, and, you know, and then what other resources do children need?
Yeah.
It's like you say, mental health and well-being is high on the agenda, isn't it? You only have to put anything into Google at the moment. And it's up there, isn't it? You know, it's up there on, you know, whether it's a child, whether it's an adolescent, whether it's an adult. It's a big topic of conversation, isn't it? And I think there's some recognition that we all need to be okay.
Yeah.
And okay in saying that we're not okay as well, in order to get the best out of children and the best out of ourselves, isn't
it? It's also, I think the... it's had a bit of negative effects. I think it's also brought around a fear of parents. We're seeing with parenting at the moment, a lot of parents that are wanting to really do attachment style parenting or, you know, really give the children the opportunity to make choices, but we seem to have gone a little bit too far with it, and we've got children that there's no boundaries in place.
There's a fine line there, isn't there?
Yeah. And parents that have no, they don't want to trauma the, you know, bring any trauma onto the child, so they don't want the child to cry and get upset and feel, and we're trying to say to them, let them feel the feelings, this is normal, you know, it's okay. And I think people are just, I do think there's sometimes there's too much information out there, and I think it gets too confusing.
Yeah.
I'm on the starting well board for Calderdale, and it's all about how we can support children from 0 to 5 to have the best outcomes. And I've said thousands of times on there, there needs to be, it's like Tiny Happy People. It's a brilliant website for families. But then there's 20 other thousand, you know, there's so many, so much information.
And everybody's got a different perspective on it, haven't they?
Yeah.
And that's good and that's right, because it enriches everybody's learning. However, when you're in the middle of that and you're seeking advice, and there's lots of contradictory advice out there, it takes a very confident person to step back, doesn't it, and say, well, what is best for this child? What is going to work for this child?
And I think we found as well, like, parents don't seem to trust anybody anymore, and we've got a lot of parents that when the health visitor is giving them advice, they're like, oh, well, you know, what does she know? And you're like, well, you know, all the years
quite
of experience.
Quite a lot.
And it's really difficult because we look to these trusted figures in the community, the GPs, the health visitors, nurse practitioners.
There's a big fear of being judged as being awful.
Yeah.
Isn't there?
Yeah.
And it's, yeah.
Yeah, it's becoming difficult, I think, things that, you know, we seem to be, we haven't leveled out yet. There's still, it is still quite tricky to navigate in this world with families and other professionals. But I think that it's just being honest with people and, you know, and caring and open-minded. I think when you're working with parents and families and other professionals, you've got to see things from other people's perspective and not judge them from what they're bringing to you. They might be angry. They might have, you know, something, and it's just being able to step back and say it's okay, we can manage this, don't we?
Or it's okay to feel cross about that, you know. It's like we've said about self-regulation, we're allowed to feel cross with a scenario or a situation, aren't we?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, as I presume as a nursery provider, you're, like we've said, this holistic approach, you're having to do a lot more counselling as I presume.
I mean, it's like a counselling session in the morning for staff when they come in the office. Yeah. You know, we've recently had a staff member whose husband's left her over Christmas, and her grandma died a week before.
That's a significant event in that person's life, isn't it?
Yeah. It's significant.
Just two children, you know.
But the pressure to carry on and keep working is even greater, isn't it? Because she's got to provide.
Yeah.
But then ultimately as well, and you're looking after other people's children, where you want to be clear-minded, a balanced approach. Yeah. So how did you manage that?
Just obviously let her cry for a good half an hour. And she actually came back into work, and we were doing a training day, and we were talking about self-regulation and understanding your own feelings and, you know, and I think for her, and a lot of her staff will tell us that nursery is their safe place. We talk a lot about the children, it being a safe place for them. but a lot of our staff feel the same. Like we say, we're a family, and yes, we're going to irritate each other, and things aren't always going to be perfect. But I think it's that you're safe here, and if you need to come in and cry for half a day in the office, we'll figure that out. Like, yeah, it's fine. Mm. But you know, we need you well in order to support the rest of your team and the children.
And ultimately, if your staff team feel valued,
yeah,
supported,
yeah,
important,
yeah,
you're going to get the best out of them, yeah, as well, totally, aren't you? Totally. You know, yeah, that ultimately then, mm, the children are receiving better care as well, yeah, aren't they?
And I think that's where I've seen my job role change, because we have a nursery manager who runs both settings, and I'm classed as the executive nursery manager, and my job role changed into I'm more like mother hen, and yeah, my job is to, yeah, make sure everyone's okay. I've started doing a lot of things around well-being in the staff, and like I say, yeah, this is a very popular thing at the moment, yeah, but it is about...
What do you do? How do you?
So I did I sent out a questionnaire about the well-being, like on a scale to 5, and we focused it around sleep, nutrition, movement, I think it were resilience, I think it were 4 or 5 things, and then they scaled themselves, and then I did... We have a software system, a nursery software system. So on that, every week I posted hints and tips of how they could support themselves, really quick, like 5 minutes of doing this. Then I sent out another questionnaire after, I think it was 6 weeks that I've done it. We do calendar events every month where we do something together. It might be like a well-being walk, or we're doing Woo Week next.
Oh, what's that?
So for Valentine's, they pick a name out of a hat and they have to do something kind for somebody.
Oh, that's lovely. Anybody.
So we're trying to do like family picnic events, just things so we can get together as a team, and it's not always about nursery. And I think I want to extend that further and do things with our families as well. So maybe like hire a play gym and everyone puts 2, and you know, so all people can be together. It's not just conversations at the door, it's, you know, being able to meet with the other parents of the children in the room, or talk to parents of parents in preschool, so you know what that experience is going to be like. It's just, you know, just bringing people together as a community. Yeah. Like, yeah, we run toddler groups and things, but obviously working parents they can't come to them.
It's hard, isn't it?
You know, so it's just thinking more about how we can help each other more, you know. And I know sometimes, you know, it's more work for us, but I think you get so much out of...
And I presume, and I know we've touched slightly there on children with special educational needs. When you start that path with that parent and that child, you're turning that, you could be turning their world upside down, can't you? That their special bundle of joy isn't quite perfect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, they are perfect.
Yeah.
You know, they are that perfect individual.
You're
shattering that little sort of bubble, aren't you? And that can be very isolating, can't it? And very sort of scary when you start to begin to have those conversations with parents. So I presume by getting all these families together, you know, it shows that they're not alone as well.
Yeah, and sense, obviously, there's not many support groups around, or there is, if there is, you have to already have a diagnosis, which obviously takes quite a long time, you know. So it's opening up avenues for parents where they can access support from each other, because there's no better experience than speaking to
a parent with a similar situation.
14-year-old daughter has a brain condition, and it wasn't until meeting other families that it really started to make sense. I learned more. They could, again, it's not what you know, it's who you know, but we give you the number for a consultant, go back to your GP. It's things like that. And I think that really stands us in good stead with our families. Like, my experience, my background, I can really empathise with a lot of families and say to them, I understand, I've been in this position myself. You know, there is no judgment, but the advice I would give you is you know, and that really helps, because it helps break down the barriers.
They accept it more. Definitely.
Yeah, definitely. You know,
this is all right. I'm not getting support. It's not, because, you know, ADHD is becoming a lot more widely known, seen. I don't know whether more children are, you know, we are quicker to pick, you know, the signs up, or whether, you know, more children are...
Yeah, it's the same with ASD.
Absolutely. You know, there's a huge spectrum there, isn't there? And I think most of us could probably place ourselves on it at some point with different scenarios, couldn't we? Yeah. You know, it's where the line draws, isn't it? But, you know, I think one of the hardest, you know, things for me when I first came across it and I really, like, that empathy was standing back and watching a parent absolutely break down inside.
Yeah.
That, you know, her daughter would not perform the way that she wanted her to. That she felt that society wanted her daughter to behave, perform, interact with other children. She was shouting, she was screaming, she was throwing herself on the floor. And as an early years, you can just get on the floor, can't you, with that child? You can get on their level. You can, you know, if you, you know, you're skilled, you can calm them down and you can develop that. But for me, the main thing that I took when I first saw that was her mum.
Yeah.
And her mum's absolute trauma. You could see it in her face that she was being judged by all the other parents whose other children were conforming to what was expected. You know, the odd funny face at the you know, as you do. And she just, and I really felt for her there, really felt, and I just thought, you need more support than your child needs. And it's hard, isn't it?
Well, the parents go through a grief process, don't they? Absolutely. You're going through a process of my expectations were, and that's been taken away from me, and then they're expected to put support in place and support the child how they should, and it doesn't work like that. Like, you parent, it could take 6 months for her to come to terms with it, you know, and all the time, the 6 months passing for this child, that does need that intervention, especially under the age of five. And, you know, it's we've got a lot of SEN children across both our sites. We have a full-time SENCO who literally works as SENCO because we can't manage to free anyone up from the rooms to do it. And, you know, them tentative steps for parents, but we found a lot of parents are actually coming to nursery and saying, I think my child has ASD. So they're already identifying it. We had some issues over COVID where parents were quite well scripted in ASD and all things, you know, neurodiverse, and it was hard for us because we're on a line now where we're saying, is it ASD or are we looking at parenting capacity, especially for children where there may be some child protection issues? And obviously we're not, you know, educational psychologists, we can't diagnose, but it's becoming more and more complex. And I think schools, we're quite close with a lot of head teachers in the area. We work really closely with them, and they're saying they're having the same issues. We've got children that maybe have some underlying behavioural issues, there may be some severe trauma there, but they're getting an ASD diagnosis in order to get help, because if they don't have a diagnosis...
Well, that's an incorrect diagnosis, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
You know, and... Yeah. Then that label's because there, so, isn't it?
Especially ADHD and trauma, they're so closely correlated to the symptoms. You know, it's very difficult, but there's no wrong or right answer with it. It's difficult, isn't it? And as parents, like I say, I think the biggest piece of advice I would offer any nursery practitioner, manager or parent is just to educate yourself. Because I think a lot of parents are like, once we get the diagnosis, and I'm like...
But like you say, sometimes it could be more of a parenting style, can't it? You know, because we've briefly touched on independence.
Yeah.
They can just learn through, well, there's a big part to, you know, learning through exploration.
Yeah.
But this learning with no boundaries that has a real connotation, doesn't it?
Yeah,
a real
definitely.
Sort of... Definitely coming through, isn't it?
You know, and then that's when you see... you know, start to see some behaviour issues because suddenly you're in a nursery environment where they will be told, that's not quite how we do it here, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe hear the word no for the first time and how then that is perceived.
And that could be a real trigger, the word no, for a lot of children. We've had to change our language to stop for some children because no's an instant trigger for them. I mean, I've gone to take children to the door to see the parents before, and the child might be kicking off, like, I don't want to leave nursery. And you've got parents like, let's go to the shop. No, all right, well, we'll go to the bigger shop. And if you, oh, well, why don't we go to, and I'll go get you a, you know, donut. And I'm like, can everyone just shush? So we just just let her feel this emotion right now.
It's an eagerness to please,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, like, I'm overwhelmed. Yeah. Never mind the child.
Like, don't want to go to the small shop, the big shop, have a donut, or the lot.
Like, let's just offer you everything in order. And I was like, you don't need to do that for my sake. I'm not bothered. Like, she's just feeling this huge emotion and she just needs to feel it, you know. Mm. And then she came out of it. Don't want to wear my coat, it's really cold outside. I was like, well, we have a choice. We either wear the coat or we put the coat in the bag. And mum was like, it's cold. And I was like, but she'll feel cold and then she'll ask you for the coat. It's just a control thing. It's fine. She isn't going to die for what to the bus stop.
But also, there's that fear of somebody's going to judge me because my child is outside in the freezing temperatures with no coat on.
Yeah, definitely. And it is. And
then I am labelled as a, you know...
You can't do anything now, can you, without being judged for something or a photo popping up on social media somewhere. You know, can't believe this woman. And it's a real fear-based world we're living in, isn't it, for parents? It's, you know, it's...
constantly watched.
Yeah, the pressures are really
on. It's really hard, isn't it, just to, like you say, step back and be confident with, this is what works for this child.
Yeah.
Whether it's you perceive that as to be... you know, correct or that's what's working for this child. Yeah. And the end goal is, you know, and lots of children take different paths to get to these goals.
Definitely. They're not all the same, are they? You really have to change, you know, how you are with them, your language with them, your body language with them. And I think this is the thing with practitioners now. You're almost having to become like, you know, mini psychologists, because... complexities in children's personalities and development is just becoming so far-reaching. It's crazy. And we seem to, I don't know if other nurseries find this, because we're in an area of deprivation in the UK, one of the top 7%. So along with that comes a lot of child protection issues. We have a lot of families that need support, SEN, and we tend to advertise, attract practitioners that possibly have interesting backgrounds themselves, you know, trauma, children with SEND. But obviously that then comes, you know, that can bring a whole host of, not problems, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
But they bring so much to the table in terms of skills, knowledge, experience.
Experience, definitely. Yeah.
But like I said, they also bring their baggage with them as such. So for me, my job stepped up a notch because I had to learn to support them to do their job better.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
So do you find the recruitment process has differed?
Yeah.
To highlight that from the onset?
Yeah, we are a different... We always say we're a different... We're not your average private day nurse, or we are different. We believe in, you know,
misfits,
supporting
but...
the children.
I think you've got a new nursery name going on there, haven't you?
Tagline. Welcome to Misfits. We need to change the name. But we are different. You know, we work a lot with local universities, Huddersfield University. We've done a lot of research projects. Anyone comes to us and says, are you happy to get involved? We're like, yeah, come along. We had the EEF come out and film us last week.
Yeah,
that was absolutely mental. But it's that take every opportunity going. It's really good mood boosting for the staff, you know, anything
you
they
always
can get
something
in.
From it, won't
yeah,
you?
It's not seen always. It's not seen it as a negative. A lot of people would see it as a negative. Well, why do they want to come to us?
And yeah.
We think it's great they want to come to us. Come in, just see what we're like.
Yeah,
when
we've got nothing
to
hide.
You know, it's quite a privileged position.
Oh, yeah.
You know. They've thought of you.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
All the nurseries that are out there.
Yeah.
We'll go there.
It's nice.
Right, so that concludes today's episode. Some really good discussions there. Thank you for your time, both of you. And we look forward to our next one.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us. It's been lovely.